Part 1. Architecture of the Revolution. Chapter 1. Reimagining the Self. You see, but you do not observe. Sherlock Holmes, A Scandal in Bohemia. I noted in the introduction that the underlying argument of this book is that the sexual revolution and its various manifestations in modern society cannot be treated in isolation, but must rather be interpreted as the specific and perhaps the most obvious social manifestation of a much deeper and wider revolution in the understanding of what it means to be a self. While sex may be presented today as little more than a recreational activity, sexuality is presented as that which lies at the very heart of what it means to be an authentic person. That is a profound claim that is arguably unprecedented in history. How that situation comes to be is a long and complicated story, and I can address only a few of the most salient aspects of the relevant narrative in a single volume. And even before I attempt to do so, it is first necessary to set forth a number of basic theoretical concepts that provide a framework, a set of what we might describe as architectural principles, for structuring and analyzing the personalities, events, and ideas that play into the rise of the modern self. In this task, the writings of three analysts of modernity are particularly useful: Charles Taylor, the philosopher; Philip Reeve, the psychological sociologist; and Alistair MacIntyre, the ethicist. While all three have different emphases and concerns, they offer accounts of the modern world that share certain important affinities and also provide helpful insights into understanding not simply how modern Western society thinks, but how and why it has come to think the way that it does. In this chapter and the next, therefore, I want to offer an outline of some of their key ideas that help set the scene for the interpretation of our contemporary world offered in the subsequent account of how the concept of the modern psychologized and sexualized self has emerged. The social imaginary. To return to the questions I posed in the introduction, how has the current highly individualistic, iconoclastic, sexually obsessed, and materialistic mindset come to triumph in the West? Or to put the question in a more pressing and specific fashion, as I did earlier, why does the sentence, "I am a woman trapped in a man's body," make sense not simply to those who have sat in post-structuralist and queer theory seminars, but to my neighbours, to people I pass on the street, to co-workers who have no particular political axe to grind and who are blissfully unaware of the rebarbative jargon and arcane concepts of Michel Foucault and his myriad epigonies and incomprehensible imitators? The statement is, after all, emblematic of a view of personhood that has almost completely dispensed with the idea of any authority beyond that of personal psychological conviction, an oddly Cartesian notion. I think I am a woman, therefore I am a woman. How did such a strange idea become the common orthodox currency of our culture? To make some attempt at addressing the issue, it is useful to take note of a helpful concept deployed by Canadian philosopher Charles Taylor in his analysis of how societies think, that of the social imaginary. Taylor is interesting because he is a philosopher whose work also engages with broader historical and sociological themes. In A Secular Age, he offers a major analysis of the way modern society in general, and not just the intellectual classes, has moved away from being permeated by Christianity and religious faith to the point that such are no longer the default for the majority of people, but actually are rather exceptional. In the course of his argument, he introduces the idea of the social imaginary to address the question of how theories developed by social elites might be related to the way ordinary people think and act, even when such people have never read these elites or spent any time self-consciously reflecting on the implications of their theories. Here is how he defines the concept. I want to speak of social imaginary here rather than social theory, because there are important differences between the two. There are, in fact, several differences. I speak of imaginary, one, because I'm talking about the way ordinary people imagine their social surroundings, and this is often not expressed.